Welcome to the Arizona Traveler. My name is Vicki Duke, and I'm your volunteer broadcaster, bringing to you a series of articles from Travel and Leisure magazine, and I'm coming to you from member-supported Sun Sounds of Arizona. The first article, The Best Small Coastal Towns in New England. Skip the crowded destinations and head to these charming beach communities along New England's coast, by Amy Thomas. Weathered cedar cottages, sprawling salt marshes, swaths of sandy dunes, and family-packed beaches. New England has its signature style. It also has limited space and legions of devoted fans, which can lead to congestion and overcrowding, particularly in the summer months. As travelers head straight to perennial favorites like Newport, Rhode Island, Provincetown, Mass., and Kennebunkport, Maine, why not take a proverbial left turn? There are loads of under-the-radar towns along these states' coastlines that have their own unique charms and draws. Here are seven of the best small towns in New England for a beach vacation. Stonington, Connecticut. Just a shell's throw away from the bustling town of Mystic is the antithesis of a tourist magnet. Connecticut's oldest village, Stonington, is a robust agricultural borough with a wee historic village that stretches down a peninsula and ends at Dubois Beach. Water Street, its main drag, has a smattering of restaurants interspersed with antique shops. But for a bite with a view, check out the popular Dog Watch Cafe, overlooking the harbor. Rent a kayak from Stonington Marina. Check out the waterfront's commercial fishing activities. And save some time to venture inland. Stonington also has vineyards with tours and tastings. Next, Niantic, Connecticut. Though much of the coastal northeast can conjure old-timey vibes, some small towns in New England have a more-of-the-moment flavor. Niantic, a village within the town of East Lyme in southeastern Connecticut, buzzes with local energy. Main Street paralleling the Long Island Sound, as well as a mile-long boardwalk, has several must-visit spots. Pick up a paperback favorite at a branch of the rambling used bookstore, The Book Barn. And if you're traveling with kids, pass some time at the Niantic Children's Museum. Beyond the main drag, enjoy a lobster roll or chili dog at the seasonal fried seafood joint, Dad's, near Niantic Bay Beach. Next, we have Little Compton, Rhode Island. East of Newport and west of Cape Cod is a blip of a town with a population of around 3,600. Appropriately named Little Compton. A visit here instantly relaxes the shoulders and slows your pace. The town's common is anchored by the Lost in Time Wilbur's General Store, with 8 rooms serving up everything from fresh deli meats and baked goods to housewares and garden accessories. Another local favorite is the Commons Lunch, where you can sample Johnny Cakes, the Rhode Island version of pancakes, grab your fishing pole and beach reeds before hitting the picturesque South Shore Beach. For a day that also brings you closer to nature, explore the 75-acre Goose Wing Beach Preserve, which teems with endangered shorebirds under the stewardship of the Nature Conservancy. Marblehead, Massachusetts is next. If Marblehead's craggy landscape doesn't transport you to another time and place, its abundance of historic architecture will. Situated about 45 minutes north of Boston on a jutted peninsula, the town has over 200 designated historic homes dating back to the 17th and 18th centuries. Many of the homes have plaques stating the name of the original inhabitants and stamped with the year. Other historic sites here include Fort Sewell, Old Burial Hill, and the Marblehead Lighthouse. For a bonus adventure, paddle over to Crown and Shield Island, a 5-acre island off Marblehead that boasts a sandy beach, hiking trails, and tidal pools. Next, we have Rockport, Massachusetts. The North Shore of Massachusetts, on which Rockport sits, doesn't jut as far out into the Atlantic as Cape Cod does in the south, but its seaside energy is similar. Amble along Main Street and the Bearskin Neck Peninsula and soak up the artsy vibes. There are upwards of 30 galleries in town, interspersed among the quintessential gift boutiques, fudge shops, and lobster shacks. Squeeze in some beach time at Front Beach or Long Beach, the former right near town, the latter just a short drive south. And no visit is complete without snapping a few pictures of Motif Number 1, an iconic red fishing shack decorated with colorful buoys. York, Maine is next. Cruise by Kittery and stop before Kennebunkport, and you'll discover the charming community of York. The town welcomed York Beach Surf Club in 2023, which Travel and Leisure Features editor Peter Terzinian said is an effort to introduce a boutique element to a somewhat tick-tacky strip of properties on York Beach, a Wildwood-esque seaside town in southern Maine. Beyond the Stonewall Kitchen flagship that greets you from the highway's exit, there are more local delights. Check out the sustainably made surfboards at Grain Surfboards, then ride some waves at Long Sands Beach, or laze about Short Sands Beach, where you can also satisfy your sweet tooth at the Goldenrod, which was founded in 1896, which makes homemade ice cream and saltwater taffy. Hiking aficionados head to Mount Agamenticus, or Big A, or opt for a less strenuous stroll along the waterfront cliff walk, a half-mile path that starts from the Hartley Mason Reserve. Booth Bay Harbor, Maine. As you cruise up the coast of Maine, you'll discover endless peninsulas and islands. About an hour north of Portland, one such inlet is Booth Bay Harbor. Get a good view of the hillside town, as well as sailboats and kayakers, while strolling across the Booth Bay Harbor footbridge, or relaxing on the rocky beaches at Barrett's Park. Another good ambling adventure is the Sculpture Trail, featuring works by local artists. The town's narrow, winding streets have plenty of boutiques and ice cream shops, and when you're ready to feast, stop by Booth Bay Lobster Wharf. That's where fishermen unload their daily catch and where you can get lobster in anything from mac and cheese, rice bowls, quesadillas, to simply their shells. And that's the end of that article. The next article in the April edition of Travel and Leisure magazine is Nature's Keepers. Brazil's vast, varied landscapes are home to enigmatic creatures like the jaguar, the spider monkey, and the maned wolf. Stanley Stewart visits three ecolodges that are leading preservation efforts to help the animals make a comeback. Going up the Amazon River. It was easy to imagine the world was still brand new, untouched by progress or technology. Our little boat was like a time machine, the millennia falling away beneath the bow. This must be how things were at the beginning, I thought, before the arrival of mankind. Birdsong rang from the jungle. A half-submerged caiman, the South American cousin of the alligator, watched us from the shadows of the bank, only its eyes visible. A giant river otter surfaced with a half-eaten fish, and spider monkeys dancing through the trees stopped to gaze down at us. Amazonia, the famed 2.5 million square mile rainforest, is never just a destination. In the popular imagination, it's an image of pre-lapsarian wilderness and the manifestation of our environmental nightmares. According to satellite data, an estimated 110,000 square miles of rainforest in Brazil, an area the size of Nevada, have been lost this century so far, much of it to monoculture agribusiness, and the pace of deforestation, which had been slowing, spiked under the administration of the anti-conservation president, Jair Bolsonaro, which lasted from 2019 through 2022. But I had come to Brazil to explore a more hopeful narrative, to learn how conscious travel can be a tool in the pursuit of habitat protection and wildlife conservation. I visited three ecolodges that run preservation programs in the country's most vulnerable habitats, the Central Cerrado Savanna, the Southwestern Pantanal Wetlands, and the sprawling Amazon rainforest. At each property, surrounded by natural beauty, visitors are encouraged to learn about and help protect these remote biosystems and the species that live there. The Cerrado grasslands. The Cerrado is a vast, empty-seeming place, largely forgotten even by Brazilians. A tropical savanna, it is the second largest habitat in Brazil after the Amazon, and depending on how it's measured, accounts for roughly a fifth of the country's landmass. Amid vast skies and limitless horizons, empty sand roads run mile after mile. But there is nothing bleak about the wildlife in this remarkable environment. The World Wildlife Fund has named Brazil's Cerrado the most biodiverse savanna in the world, with 11,000 plant and 200 mammal species, 20 of which are endemic. Yet, for all its biological riches, the area is under threat, disappearing at twice the rate of the Amazon forest. Industrial farming, chiefly for soybeans, has seen exponential growth in the past 25 years, supported by use of harmfully high levels of lime and phosphorus fertilizers. Only about a fifth of the Cerrado's original area remains intact, Some experts fear the grasslands may disappear completely in the coming generations. One leader of the conservation efforts here is Fazenda Tucana. The fazenda, the word means ranch or farm in Portuguese, supports environmental projects that preserve the surrounding landscape and explore non-destructive agricultural practices such as growing fruit trees and implementing sustainable grazing patterns. It also runs Pousada Trujancao, a 7-room lodge that, in addition to providing employment for locals, is drawing travelers' attention to the Cerrado and its wild inhabitants. Pousada Trujancao's clay airstrip can be reached by an hour-long flight directly from Brasilia. Stylishly constructed from sustainable materials, the lodge has the feeling of a sleepy outpost, a place of hammocks, home cooking, and the world's best caipiranas. The rooms are quirky, decorated with plants and art by local artisans, yet still feel luxurious. The property's hot water is heated by solar energy. On languorous afternoons, I watch swallows dive over the surface of the swimming pool as guinea pigs scampered around the courtyard. In the early mornings, I climb to the top of the site's observation tower with ornithologist Vinicius Viana to scout fabulously colored birds, red and green macaws, peach-fronted parakeets, and toucans. But the most iconic and elusive star of the Cerrado is the maned wolf. With its long legs and reddish fur, this remarkable creature looks more like a small deer than a canine. There are thought to be only 17,000 adults left in South America, a number that's diminishing all the time. 90% of those are in Brazil. The primary threat to their survival is shrinking habitat. The Cerrado remains one of their chief domains, though they are also found in Argentina, Bolivia, Paraguay, and Peru. Few people have seen the maned wolf, but its smell may be familiar to many. The scent of their urine markings is commonly mistaken for cannabis. Tracking and recording the wolves' behavior is the focus of a project run by Ancafari, a Brazilian conservation NGO that has partnered with Fazenda. At dusk, I set off in a jeep through low scrubland with two Ancafari guides, Barbara Couto and Isabella Menes. They are generally solitary creatures, Menes said of the maned wolves. And when they mate, both sexes are monogamous. But Norina, an alpha female in the area, refused to be tied down by the conventions of her species. She has taken at least three partners that we know of. Couto smiled. We like her. Couto and Menes tracked Norina by the signal of her radio collar. When they spotted a line of paw prints in the soft sand, we followed them deeper into the Cerrado. Under a lowering sky that gave off a strange pewter-tinged light, a pampas deer came into view, still as a statue in the long grass, before starting and bounding away. A Stygian owl perched on a branch, waiting for dark. The three of us continued for an hour while the dust thickened until suddenly, as we came around a bend, there she was. Norina trotted ahead of us, long-legged, elegant, slender, her tail a flash of white. In that gray, uncertain twilight, she might have been a ghost. She stopped in the track and turned to look over her shoulder. For a long moment, those haunting eyes looked straight at our vehicle, assessing us. And then she disappeared, the road suddenly empty. Several months after my trip, I received tragic news from Couto and Menez. Norina was gone. She and two of her pups had drowned in a drainage ditch on neighboring farmland. The Ankafari team was devastated. But that same month, the researchers made a new discovery. On their usual rounds, they spotted Savannah, Norina's two-year-old daughter, with three new cubs. "The wolves teach us to be resilient," Menez said when I spoke to her on the telephone, "and to never lose hope. Their work at Pusada Trijankau feels more vital than ever." Next, the Pantanal Wetlands, Casa Cayman. Heading to another vulnerable region, I flew south in a small plane, landing on the edge of a lake deep in the Pantanal. The water's surface shone in the bright sunshine and trees threw intricate shadows on the ground. The day felt fresh and full of promise. Threaded by meandering rivers, the Pantanal is a wetland that's 16 times larger than the Florida Everglades. In the wet season, when the streams break their banks, much of the region's savanna and scrub floods, and many animals migrate to wooded islands marooned among the sheets of shallow water. The biodiversity is astonishing. The species list consists of more than 600 birds, around 100 mammals, and myriad reptiles and amphibians. UNESCO has declared it a biosphere reserve. But curiously, the Pantanal is also ranching country. For well over 200 years, herds of white cattle, weather corrals, and cowboys on horseback have coexisted a little uneasily with teeming wildlife. In the mid-1980s, conservationist Roberto Klaben inherited some of his family's ranch land, ultimately amassing the 131,000 acres in southern Pantanal that make up the Cayman Ecological Reserve. Part of the property has been fenced and set aside as a government-protected nature preserve. But most of it remains open, allowing cattle to continue living on the land. At the south of the estate, the 18-suite Casa Cayman welcomes travelers with an aesthetic poised somewhere between Western chic and Caribbean luxury. Sand-yellow walls and rust-red rooftops help the buildings blend naturally into the surrounding landscape. The bedrooms and living rooms are spacious and uncluttered. There are leather armchairs to sink into, sprawling sofas, piles of books about Brazilian wildlife, and decorative details from Andean textiles to contemporary art. Over a meal with my guide, Murillo Fraseo, the conversation spanned a hyacinth macaw rescue program, the sex life of capybaras, and the sticky tongue of giant anteaters, 2 feet long and able to flick in and out 150 times a minute. He told me about jaguar lore, including the traditional indigenous belief that the big cats carried the souls of deceased shamans. Then we gather our binoculars and cameras and head out. And my final destination in Brazil was the Amazon, Rainforest. The National Heritage Reserve was created by the conservationist Vittoria de Riva Carvalho. The sanctuary stretches across more than 28,000 acres, and together with the neighboring Cristalino State Park, is one of the most important areas of biodiversity in the entire rainforest. Spread out among flower beds and forest paths, the lodge is a collection of small bungalows with hammocks strung on the porches. The furnishings are comfortable rather than stylish, but it was the river I loved. The boat excursions upstream and down. People fall for rivers, and I had fallen for the Cristalino. The boat gliding over the surface, the trees trailing branches seductively in the current. Human and habitat destruction are the chief threat to every animal I saw on this remarkable journey. But low-impact travel with responsible lodges and operators is one of the ways we can support them. Well, that's the end of that article and the end of our time together today. Thank you so much for listening to my show, The Arizona Traveler. Again, my name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from member-supported Sun Sounds of Arizona.